Us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Teresa.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to have a pretty cool show based all around fights, if you can't tell by the title. But before we get into that, we kind of want to speak about the week and what's been happening. For me, there's been some good stuff personally. There was a bit of a low point with, if you follow EGM Now, the website, they recently or not too long ago announced that they wouldn't be able to afford to pay freelancers anymore because of this whole Corona thing. And a lot of us were working on big stories, big features, because the way they did it this past year was every week or so, I believe, or every few days, they would have a new feature on the front page. And their website was unique in that they would always have a new feature. Whereas other websites, gaming sites, would have mostly news and reviews, previews, those sort of things. They were very, they were pushing features and interesting stories about, you know, video games. But like literally every week, there would be something else on the front page. And so I had, last year I'd gotten an article on the front page there. And so I was writing another one, and this was a pretty decent story in terms of idea, like what I'm talking about, I don't think many has covered as of yet. And so I was kind of bummed a little bit, not just for me, but for all the people who had spent months or whatever writing stories, who wouldn't be able to post them. However, another site or a few other sites were picking up some of the EGM writers or the freelancers, I should say, not EGM. They're still working and such. They're not out of a job, but they just can't pay freelancers. And so a couple of websites kind of reached out and was like, hey, you know, even if we can't necessarily afford what they were going to pay, we would like to, you know, pitch your story to us and we'll see if we have room. You know, one of the websites, the one that actually took my story, they fundraised money to be able to pay as many EGM writers as possible, which was I think is pretty sweet. They got their fans and everything to kind of donate money. They had their own money. The website is called Uppercut Crit, and they had their own money, but then they also asked their fans. And so not just their fans gave money, but other writers from other websites also gave money to help everyone out. And
so
it's
nice.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And so I'm going to be working, you know, finishing that up for them. So that's been great. Also, on the flip side, in terms of news that's not personal, there's a bunch of stuff that came out gaming related. Some good, some bad, and some kind of odd. So good news, Ubisoft revealed Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which looks, well, at least from the cutscene trailer that they showed, looks pretty cool. It's interesting in that they're going totally in a different way in terms of, you know, even though that the characters end up back in London or England, they're going a different route with Vikings and such. And you play as a character who can be male or female. You can customize them, different hair, tattoos, war paint, that sort of thing. And they're job or their role is to lead their clan of Norsemen across the North Sea over to England because there's too much fighting going on where they live. Lack of resources, that sort of thing. They kind of want to relocate. Unfortunately, King Alfred and the Saxons don't really like them being there. They see them as, you know, heathens and mongrels and whatnot. And there's this propaganda to kind of like, you know, kind of bash them to the people because the king is afraid that they'll, you know, usurp his throne. And that's not actually, I mean, from the trailer we saw, that's not actually what they're trying to do. They're just trying to find
a
place
to live. Farming land. That's it. They just want to farm.
Exactly. And because there's a part in that, if you haven't seen the trailer, definitely check it out. It's on our website, unitedforgaming.com. But if you look at the trailer, you show them like, you know, when they fight, it shows them going through a village and a mother and child are running away. And the main character kind of stops his men from attacking them to let the women and children free, flee. If they were just crazy, you know, Viking raiders coming to take over the land, they would have killed everyone. Excuse me.
That's what they were doing, which is why King Alfred didn't like him in the first place.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and so very interesting. And you know, with the Assassin's Creed series, they always sprinkle in, or I should say, their stories based on true events that they kind of weave a non-true or a fictional, you know, story within that. So there's certain things that actually did happen during this time that are really interesting. And so that was cool that they announced that they were going to be revealing it a few days ago. And then they showed the trailer as well as let everyone know that it's coming out this year. It's going to be on the Xbox One, the PS4, the PS5, the Xbox Series X, and PC. They also noted that it's going to be exclusive to the Epic Game Store or the Ubisoft Game Store. So Steam players are kind of out for a bit. I don't know when they're going to get it. I know they're eventually going to get it in some form or fashion, but right now it's going to be, or I should say later this year, it's going to be on Epic and Ubisoft only. If you didn't know, Epic has been doing this for a while now with their game store to kind of have some leverage over Steam, having somewhat of a monopoly. And the developers are keen on this because Epic guarantees them a certain amount of money back on their investment. So even if the game doesn't sell, they kind of break even, which is a huge thing. Not so much for AAA developers like Ubisoft, especially for a huge series like Assassin's Creed, but that's one of the reasons why this exclusive stuff is kind of happening. It's not necessarily just to kind of, you know, push Steam out of the way. It's also to kind of help some of the developers who or publishers who need that help. So, yeah, kind of good and bad depending on, you know, if you're, you know, beholden to Steam, but it's also coming to the console. So we will be covering that as, you know, more information rolls out. So definitely check that out. Some of the bad information. So there's been news about the work environment over at Naughty Dog. They're developing The Last of Us Part 2 in terms of crunch. This is something we talked about before where these big games, you know, they force people to work and work and work and work and work and work. Or if they don't force, they kind of super incentivize them to do so. And it's draining. It's really bad. I'm not going to go into all of what crunch is, but it's bad. And apparently, now this isn't super official, although some websites, you know, they have contacts and such within the gaming industry that don't want to be known. But the word on the street is that someone felt a way about all the crunch and released The Last of Us 2 script or like the plot.
Ooh.
So it's out there. The entire plot is out there. And because of that, Sony was forced to push the release date of the game up because they were pushed it back for logistic reasons in terms of, you know, Corona, not being able to sell physical copies, that sort of thing. But then also just to kind of, you know, make sure that the game is solid. And now they have to push it up. So the new release date is actually June 19th.
That's June 19th.
That's when the game is going to be coming out. And that also means that they moved Ghost of Tsushima. I can't say the name. Sorry. their Ghost game, the Samurai game, to July 17th. They had to move that out of June. So some stuff has been shaken up. Unfortunately for the developers still working there, that's their hard work. Even though, you know, I get why someone would be upset and why they would do such a thing, but I don't understand them hurting their team. Because if the game, I don't think it's not going to sell, mind you, but if the game didn't sell because people were like, you kind of spoiled it for me, that hurts the people who spent all that time crunching. Like, you're not hurting the people who you need to hurt. And you shouldn't hurt anyone, but in terms of like their pockets or whatever the case may be, you're not hurting the right people. And so it was kind of a trashy move. And so in light of that, the game is getting moved up, but you know, there's all this blowback that's been happening because of it. And you know, people are fighting on Twitter in terms of in social media about who was right, who was wrong. Some people aren't going to buy the game out of principle of the crunch anyways. Some people were like, we're not going to buy it because we basically saw the whole plot. That's rough. That's real, you know, that's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the person who did it is going to get outed. It's just going to happen. And they're not going to be able to work in game development ever. No big company is going to, even if the company isn't crunching, none of them are going to want to work with you because you kind of you leaked something huge. I mean, they've been working on this for multiple years. Like, I don't know who benefits from that, but
who knows? They might get a spot on some talk show. You know, like you never. Anyway, you never know. Somebody who does something bad sometimes ends. You know, like Sean Spicer. Moving along, I have a question about Sony pushing the release date, because didn't they do that with X-Men? Not X-Men, but you know the Wolverine story, the Wolverine backstory with him and Liev Schreiber. And
Wolverine origin. I believe something similar, but it wasn't to this extent.
It wasn't crunch, but wasn't like the part of the movie or the plot release or some. So that's at least that's what I heard, which was why the special effects were so bad in certain. It was just like, wait a minute, what is going on here? Like, I think there was a part where Wolverine accidentally like hit the sink. Like he sliced the sink open or something like that.
Yeah.
He was just like, what's going on with these graphics? Apparently, I heard that the movie was rushed because part of it was leaked, or part of the storyline was leaked.
I mean, possible. Sony had that huge leak years ago where, you know, it showed people's how much they were getting paid for per film, what films were in development. Like it was bananas. And it you know, it cost them trust. It cost them, and like, because certain people who were working, you know, they were getting paid one way, and you know, someone was getting paid more or less. They found out about it, you know, because that sort of thing you don't share.
You also don't tell the public that Idris Elba isn't allowed to be James Bond.
Yeah, it was bad. Leaks are bad for the most part. I mean, outside of leaking something where people are being mistreated, like obviously those you do want to leak. Or, you know, get it to the press or something so things can change and get better.
Yeah.
But not in a sense, in a case where, like, you're hurting the people who are working hard. Because at the end of the day, that's how you get paid. Like, if my project succeeds, I get hired again. And, yeah. But if not, you know, it's like, or you know, something doesn't come to fruition. Like, hey, we had planned on doing so. I think it was what's the guy? Quentin Tarantino was saying how someone had leaked his script, and so he just canceled one of his films. And I don't know if he still, like, if he came back to it, but I remember reading about that, like, he just canceled it. And so the people who he was getting ready to, in terms of hire for the role of whoever in the film, they're out of a job. And so it's like, why? Just keep it to yourself. Like, those few little brownie points of like, ooh, you broke something. When it's something like that, it turns negative. It goes backwards. So, you know, keep that to yourself.
I just think that Sony should have just been like, you know what? Plot's out there. It's already out there. If it's already out there, then there's no need to rush the game.
Well, what's going to happen is, or what I think is going to happen is that they're going to add some stuff to it to kind of offset maybe how some people feel. Mm-hmm. And so that means more crunch. So like you didn't help. Like you didn't. Because typically what people think is when a game gets delayed, for technical reasons or whatever, they're thinking like, oh, we have more time. But really that means more crunch because we don't want to delay it again. So, you know what I'm saying? So like it's jacked up. So outside of that, Destroy All Humans, the remaster, is got a release date. That's coming this July, July 28th, I believe. And that game was hilarious. It's basically Grand Theft Auto, but you play as an alien who wants to destroy all humans. And you do things like, you know, you can use this his ability to kind of mask himself in like a holographic image inducer. So like he can look like a human to kind of get into like secret bases and stuff like that when he's not just blowing stuff up or stealing cattle or whatever the case may be. It's a really fun game that was released years ago, and it's coming back for the PS4 and Xbox One and PC. $39.99, but you get all of like, you know, improved graphics and a few extra goodies in terms of like more missions than what was in the original game and stuff like that. So it finally got a release date. It was announced back in E3 last year. And so, coming in July. Now, put a pinch of salt in that, because obviously all of this is tentative with Corona, you know, out there. These dates are getting moved around, you know, more than domino pieces. So, you know, it right now it's looking like it's going to be in July, but you know, there's that. And then the last thing in gaming is actually more UFG related. We got to play Streets of Rage 4. I actually streamed it yesterday. The game came out today. We got a review code, I want to say 2 days ago. And so we, you know, we've been playing the game or whatever, and we wanted to stream it so people can kind of check it out. So if you wanted to see the game before purchasing it, definitely go there. I kind of talk about the things that I like and I dislike. It's not a official review. That will come later in written form, but it's something to kind of watch and kind of get into, you know, see what you're getting into if you were to purchase the game. Like I said, it's out right now on just about everything. PS4, Xbox One, the Switch, PC, and yeah, it's pretty awesome so far. If you like beat 'em up games, like, you know, Double Dragon, Final Fight, that sort of thing, or if you're just a fan of Streets of Rage, I would definitely look into it and, you know, check it out on their site.
Cool. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Is the other game you were talking about, the Alien game, who's the maker of that game?
So that is THQ Nordic. They're originally just THQ, and that and the Nordic company joined forces to kind of they I want to say they went bankrupt a while, like years ago, but then they kind of like started buying back all of their property and intellectual property. And so they've been re-releasing a lot of older games and remastering games. And so this is one of them on a long list of stuff that they had coming out. And so far, it looks really good. Like, we have a release date trailer on the site, and it shows the alien's name is Crypto. Crypto 153, or no, what is it? Crypto 137. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it shows him like causing all sorts of havoc. It's fun, like tongue in cheek type stuff. I don't know how well it holds up to today. I haven't played it in years, but when I did play it, it was hilarious. It was a good time. And so, yeah, fun game.
It reminded me when you're talking about it, and you're like, it's really fun, reminds me of like Grand Theft Auto. It reminded me of like Rockstar Games. Rockstar used to have this game called State of Emergency.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, obviously, I've never played the game that you're speaking of, but it just brought back flashbacks of like, you know, State of Emergency. You go into the mall and it's just crazy. It's complete anarchy. It's chaos. And your job is to bash windows, and then you can beat up people for points and like kill cops for points, you know, or it's like, you know, kill the security guards. The security, they're not security guards. They're the men. What is it? They're like
the man.
Yeah. They're the man, and they come after you. So if you see, like, if you're going to get points for killing looters, they're still people. And so like, and then like the man is trying to stop you from completing your mission. Cause your mission is to grab a disc from somebody and then get it to the exit point without being stopped or killed or something. You just get points for doing other things like killing people, robbing, bashing windows, and all kinds of silly things.
That game was nuts. That game was essentially what everybody, what certain people thought Grand Theft Auto was. Uh-huh. They were like, oh, that's what you think Grand Theft Auto is? It actually has a story, a plot, you know, all this other good stuff. But yeah, we're just going to make what you think it is. And they gave that out. And that's crazy. But like Destroy All Humans is similar in a sense that, I mean, there is a story. He's trying to, you know, leave. Well, he wants to kill everyone, but there's something else at the heart of the story too. But what's really cool is like, I think it's set in like 1960s. And there's all this like, people don't understand what's going on anyways. And so with him being there causing all this trouble, you can just imagine the things he's getting into.
Yeah.
You know, way back when, you know, not to say it was simpler times, but definitely simpler times with, you know, UFO sightings and stuff of that nature. So to have him like an alien actually land and do crazy stuff. Yeah. It's great. It's great.
So what's playing in the background right now?
Right now is, I was playing this game called Hob, and it's a, what do you call it? It was free on the Epic Game Store. It came out, I want to say, last year, and it's a top-down game, like puzzle game, similar to Legend of Zelda, but a little lacking in on the story, but because nothing is spoken, there's no words or anything like that. Everything is kind of shown to you. And what I gather is that there's a world that's like part nature, part machine, that's like coexisting. And there's like this third force, or you know, force of nature that is corrupting everything. And it's like this pink goo and stuff, and all these monsters are showing up, and it's your job to kind of fix things. But it goes bad really quickly. You're following this like golem, like robot thing, and he's kind of showing you around, and he's kind of warning you of what not to touch and stuff like that. And you get infected by the purple goo, and he has to remove your arm.
Oh.
And so in doing so, though, he gives you one of his arms, one of his robotic arms, and that arm can be used to open doors, to move large objects, basically get solve puzzles around the environment. And over time, you get offensive skills like a sword and stuff like that, and abilities. And you essentially have to solve all these puzzles to kind of turn on these machines to make the world, I guess, better in a way. Mm-hmm. I didn't get too far into it. Into the game, I want to say I solved two like major puzzles, which took a long time. It's by puzzle, I mean you have to, there's like these mini puzzles where you have to find out how to unlock a door, and once you get through that door, you have to find out how on a switch that powers this big machine, and that switch, you know, it's missing a part that you have to go find. So it's like, is this stuff, is this thing that kind of like unravels as you go, and it's interesting. It was fun enough to continue, but I don't know if it's fun enough for me. I don't feel invested enough to finish, but it looked cool and it was peaceful. I love the artwork. There's like this soft, cell shaded artwork. Not necessarily as good as the Wind Waker, but decent. I can't remember who the indie dev is who made the game, but they did a swell job in terms of the puzzles, like how they're smart. Like you feel smart after you solve the puzzles, and the enemy encounters and stuff like that are pretty cool. It's just a little low, or the story is slow moving. And I think that because there's no dialogue, there's no text to read, you kind of have to really paint a picture. And what happens is there's a lot of puzzle solving, and then a little bit of story, and then a lot of puzzle solving. And so at some point, it's like, I forgot what I was doing. Like, why am I here again?
Right.
So that kind of took me out of it. But it's a fun game. It's fun enough, I should say. People, you know, if you want, go ahead and check it out. It's on the Epic Game Store and Steam, I believe. And yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if I'm going to keep playing just yet, but it's interesting.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So how, one of the things we were talking about before, which kind of led to this particular episode, was fight scenes and just fighting in anime in general. Because that's outside of like a well-written story or something from like Studio Ghibli, we like the fights, at least in the US, right? Because like those are the ones that kind of get really big. The Narutos, Dragon Ball Zs, Bleach, is the ones that that are action-oriented. Mm-hmm. And so we got to talking and we were like, you know what? We should talk about some of our favorite fight scenes in anime. And, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said fight night.
Yeah, fight night. And so we decided to kind of, we made a list of a few different anime fight scenes, and we're kind of going to talk about them and share why we thought they were really cool, you know, kind of go back and forth. So I'll share one, and then Tess will share one, and we'll go from there. In terms of like, you know, the fights. Now, mind you, these aren't necessarily the best fights from the show. For instance, I'll take my first pick, Naruto, Lee versus Gaara. Now, that isn't the best fight in the Naruto series. It's really not. There's so many more. And that's not even the best Lee fight. Lee fought Kimimaro. The bone guy.
The bone guy, yeah.
He did the drunken style kung fu that was like, it was awesome. It was just, the anime was fluid. Like the movements were really cool to see in terms of him combining his hits and actually overpowering a much more powerful opponent. And it was awesome to see. But this particular fight, this was Lee's first big fight on the show.
Yeah.
And in the manga. And the reason why this is dope is because Lee was counted out so much because he doesn't have he can't do ninjutsu. Like he can't do he can't summon, he doesn't have like the Sharingan or any type of bloodline trait that allows him to do something cool. He can't, you know, shoot fireballs. He can't do any of those things. He is all about physicality, punching, kicking, that sort of thing. And, you know, Gaara is like, I mean, he had, not only does he have one of the tailed beasts inside him, which gives him power, he also controls sand. Like, he is feared as a child. He is feared by his entire country, or, you know, yeah, his entire country, basically, because he's so freaking powerful, right? Mm-hmm. And that's as a kid. Obviously, he gets older and he gets better, but for right now, he's basically a demon with sand. Okay.
Yeah. Totally.
And what's dope about this fight is like people are like, yo, Lee's gonna die. Like, don't put him up against. And so, but you know, of course, Guy Sensei is like, psh, y'all don't know about Lee.
Yo, Guy Sensei. Everybody needs a Guy Sensei in their life.
Facts. Like, and granted, you don't need anyone, you need to match your outfits with at a young age. That's a little bit.
Why do you say that? I don't agree. What you need an older person to look like.
I mean, if that's your father, sure, but that's a little too R. Kelly for me. We need you not to match. However, teaching him, I believe it's Tai Chi, like the fighting style that he taught him allows him to unlock what's called the gates, and basically gives him chakra boost. So like, he gets faster, he gets stronger, he can do some amazing things, you know, punching and kicking. And he goes up against Gaara. And it's one-sided. It is one-sided out the gate because, like I said, Gaara is a beast and he's not letting him get any punches in. And people are like, I knew it. I knew we shouldn't have got, you know, we shouldn't have put Lee in this situation. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, you know what, I'm going to go for it. And he starts to unlock the gates. And I want to say he unlocks like three gates or something like that. And he's flying. And he's actually, so like Gaara, one of the things about him is that he puts sand all over his body as like a thin shield. So when he gets punched, he doesn't necessarily feel it. And Gaara was like moving so quick that he could actually get some punches in, and it started to crack his armor. So Gaara's like, who is this dude? Like, what, you know, I've never been like touched like this before. And so he goes on the offense, and he starts to hurt Lee. And so people are like, okay, I see you, Lee, you're doing it, but not enough to win, right? And so he unlocks, I think, two more gates, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this all from memory. And he goes insane. He does more than crack his armor. Like, he knocks pieces off. He's punching him in the air and jumping in the air and, like, slamming him in the ground. He's using, he ties his hands up with, like, wraps or whatever. He uses his wraps from his wrists and hands to grab Gaara and, like, keep him close to him so he could continue to pummel him. Like, it was amazing to see. And then, unfortunately, he loses. His leg is broken, and Gaara is literally getting ready to kill him. And
his whole body is broken.
Yeah, he's a wreck. And some of the higher ups jump down to kind of stop Gaara before he kills him. But Lee got respect that day.
Yeah.
Even though he lost, he was respected. Like, oh, you don't need to do all the stuff that we do. Like, you're pretty amazing. And he goes from there. Like, from that point, throughout the rest of the show, he gets better and better and better, and people start to respect him more, because at one point he was kind of like Naruto in his group, where he's like the laughing stock. He's the, you know, we don't expect much from you, that sort of thing. Similar to Guy Sensei, when they do flashbacks about him and his team, he was kind of like, they don't believe in you for the most part. Mm-hmm. He had to prove himself. And so that was Lee's turning point, which is rather early in the show, where he's like, okay, I am a ninja. I can be a part of, you know, this elite group of people. Like, I can defend myself. I can protect people. You know, even though that I can't do some of the things that you can do, I'm still pretty awesome. And it was basically his Batman moment. Like he was Batman for that episode.
Yeah.
And it worked out pretty well for him in the long run.
In the long run, yeah. I mean, to me, it's kind of like Steve Urkel and the come up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, I'm the nerdiest of the nerds. Nobody really respects me. People know me for not really having any skills. But I work really hard and I'm smart, or kind of. And then he had his, like, Urkel to Stefan moment. And it was like, whoa! It was a complete glow up.
Yes.
I mean, you know, nobody has ever seen him fight that way. It was kind of like when Hinata got her shit together. And Hinata
yes.
was insane. I mean, again, we're not going to list all the fights from Naruto, but when nobody expects that you have that ability, guy killed. I love that episode. I love that fight. It's awesome.
Yes, it was great. I was rooting for him. I was really like just watching it. I was like, oh, he's gonna win, folks. He's gonna win.
And
it was great. But it was okay. It was a good
poorly,
loss.
Poorly. So I know that was a great fight. We all agree. I think a lot of people will probably be like, yeah, no, that was an amazing fight. One of my fights that I have listed is from the show Basilisk. So if you are a Basilisk fan, you'll know it is fight heavy, ninja style, not comedic. It is a serious show. It's kind of on the same level as Ninja Scroll.
Right.
And the first fight from the first episode, so right out the gate, I think this is one of the reasons why the show was able to captivate so many viewers, is just because that first fight scene right out the gate with Shogen versus Yashamaru is just, it's graphic, it's ridiculous, it's disgusting, and it just kind of makes you feel a certain type of way. You're like, wait a minute, I need to watch this. And I can't remember if that came out, what, it was like 2003 or something, 2004? I don't remember. But, you know, we're at a point in time where animation is starting to get better. It's starting to, you know, they're using more computer graphics, they're using more techniques to make animation look better. And at that point in time, it was really, really, really well done. I think it was a very well animated first episode. So you have Yashamaru using those very thin wires, almost like Cat's Cradle.
Yeah.
Throwing them out like, oh, I'm going to kill you. And then you have Shogen, who is basically a human arachnid. It's disgusting. Okay, he's a spider. He's sitting there throwing phlegm. I didn't even know that spiders threw phlegm. Or was he not a spider? Was he supposed to be some other type of creature?
It doesn't. It was just creepy regardless.
Gross. Like, gross. He's crawling around on all fours. I swear to God there were other legs in there. Don't know, but there could have been. But he's crawling around looking like some sort of creature. Yashamaru is looking like a normal person. And that part where, you know, Yashamaru was like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna get you, because Yashamaru gets the upper hand at the first, like, the first throw, and he gets Shogen on that rock.
Yeah.
And so, basically, Shogen is stuck on this rock with these thin wires, like, and Yashamaru's like, I'm gonna kill you, because they were allowed to play to the death. The whole purpose of the fight was so that Tokugawa could pick, you know, which ninja would represent which ninja clan would represent one of his sons to, you know, become the next shogun. And it's like so wonderful how they decided things back then. Oh, you know, the life of you is just so unnecessary that I'm going to let you guys fight to the death to prove which one of my, you know, privileged sons gets to sit on my, you know, I'm not going to say throne, because the shogun was not the emperor. They were military generals. But I'm like, yeah, so basically you ninja, I know you train your whole life and you kill your besties to get to where you need to be in life. I don't care about your life, even though you protect me. I don't really care. You don't mean anything. Go ahead and kill yourself so I can figure out who's stronger. So you've got Yashamaru, who's got Shogen on this rock. He then, like, does some weird thing with his fingers, Cat's Cradle, and then next thing you know, the rock is obliterated, but Shogen, he finds some way to get out of it, like, flies on the roof, Lord knows. They're sitting there fighting. You've got the Tokugawa, who's sitting there like, these people are disgusting. You've got Hattori Hanzo, third Hanzo or whatnot, sitting there like, yeah, man, this isn't gonna go, so somebody's about to be dead. And next thing you know, like, Shogun's shot this phlegm or whatever he's got. Yashamaru in a really bad position has the nerve to touch him inappropriately. I was definitely very, very shocked. I was like, wow, that's graphic. Luckily, this isn't on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, I downloaded it. But anyway, I mean, just the fact that, like, Yashamaru's at that point where he's like, I'm about to lose my life. And then next thing you know, he manages to shoot wires from every part of his body because, you know, he's a ninja and he keeps wires just tied around parts of his body and they just obey his every whim. And it cuts off his hair. That was the coolest part. The part that he loses all of his hair and then, well, not all of it, but because he's in a tight spot, he's like, the only way to get out of this is to dramatically shoot these wires out of my body and they're going to beautifully cut my hair off. So anyway, you know, they keep fighting each other. It's all dramatic until finally Ieyasu Tokugawa is like, okay, that's enough. I've seen what you guys can do, and then tells everybody what they're supposed to do. And the next thing you know, fight's over. You got the two ninja clans who are warring. They're like, yay, we get to kill each other. And then the best part of that episode is obviously when Ogen and Danjo kill each other. That came out of nowhere. But great first episode, great fights. I was hooked, and that's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, it totally set the tone. That fight reminded me of, I mean, granted, we already said that it reminds you of Ninja Scrolls, but it reminds me of in the film where the guy with the bees, like, in his back, was fighting, and, you know, the way they killed him was, you know, he ended up falling in water, and, like, the bees or whatever they got upset and, like, stung him on the inside, and he ended up dying. But, like, okay, the fact that he was able to use bugs, or, like, you know, be kind of like a bug and fight against a ninja in that way was really interesting. So, like, when I saw this particular fight, I was like, oh, this totally has that vibe.
Yeah.
From before. And I wonder, you know, granted, is one of those things where you could say, like, it was kind of like inspired, but maybe not based on the timing and whatnot. Similar to, like, it just fell out of my head, but anything that kind of happens at the same time that's very similar, like the Hunger Games and what is that, Battle Royale? Like, the two writers didn't know of each other, but they wrote similar, you know, plots.
I still don't believe that she didn't know.
I mean, I can only take her word for it, but it's the timing, because one of the things was, like, how quickly she could write the book and get it out and then get it blown up that big makes more sense on her side in saying that she didn't know. Because usually when you're copying someone, you don't even know if it's going to be popular yet. Like, it was so early in Battle Royale that there was some buzz here, but not enough for me to go, I'm going to go copy that. Unless you're just like, I just know this is going to blow up, and so I got to make the Hunger Games. I don't know. But I was like, okay, I could kind of see.
Side note. I mean, like, side combo, I like going in what you're saying. I more personally feel that, you know, there are a lot more foreign film fans out there than I think we give credit to.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and so I'm not going to say that this was just a straight up copy, because that's bold, but it doesn't mean that there was no inspiration there, because it was popular in Japan, it was popular in Asia, and it was popular enough here. I mean, I know that I worked at a foreign film store, you know, we sold anime and everything else, so it was like, obviously it's going to be easy for me to find it, but it was just so, like, just the double winners. Like, she says that she based it off of Greek mythology, off of the Minotaur. And I'm like, okay, that's fine if that's what you want to say. It was just the double winner thing was like, because everything else was exactly the same. And then you had the double winner. Like, that's so specific.
It is. Anywho.
Anyway, moving on.
So my next fight is actually from the Street Fighter II, the movie. And this is basically Chun Li versus Vega. This was a dope fight. The animation in that film was really, really good. Not just because it was drawn really well, but there was realistic movements. One of the things that would kind of bother me about some fight scenes in animated features is, I know you're going to be doing superhuman you know, feats of strength or superhuman abilities, moves, whatever the case may be. It's really cool though to see like realistic kicks and punches though. And in Street Fighter, there were a lot of times where there was a real blow, like someone blocked properly and punched properly or hit. Like there's the fight with Ryu and the guy that looks like Bruce Lee. I can't remember his name. There's a couple of times where he punched. It looked like a UFC fight in certain moments. And so this particular fight, though, is not the best of the film, but it's one of those things where, similar to Lee, you have a person who hadn't shown her potential just yet. We know her from the game, obviously, but in terms of the film, she hadn't shown how dope she is. And Vega is an assassin coming to kill her on the orders of Bison. And yeah, he caught her by surprise. She wasn't ready for it. She's not even dressed properly. And she's getting beat all, you know, all crazy. And, you know, Vega has blades, you know, on some Edward Scissorhands stuff. So, like, he's cutting her up and throwing her around. And, you know, while this is happening, Giles is calling her. He's on his way over there, and she gets knocked into the phone. Now, this is, you know, back in the day where they had the wired phones. You know, we don't have those nowadays, but she knocks the phone over. So, like, you know, typically, like, you know, it wouldn't do anything, but because it was one of the older phones, he could hear what was going on. Like, it didn't just hang up. And so he's like, oh, crap. So he's like, you know, put his car in gear and he's flooring it over there. So you're thinking like, oh, Chun-Li's going to die because she's getting mollywopped. But then all of a sudden she's like, Vega gloats. And this is where things kind of go left for him. He knocks her, like, so she's doing decent in terms of like getting out of the way of his spikes. And, you know, she flipped him a couple times and stuff like that. But for the most part, she's losing. And he knocks her over to the couch and she's like leaning on the couch and he's like, he takes his mask off and he's like, you know, I'm pretty and, you know, I'm this and that. And you basically had no choice. Like, this is going to happen to you. And she gets upset. She picks up the couch and throws it at him. And from there, it's on. She's punching, kicking. She's flipping and like grabbing onto the, I guess like the rafters or whatever in her place and is like beating him up or whatever. And he's still getting his licks in, and you know, in terms of fighting back, but she's starting to dominate. She hits him in the face a couple of times, and he because he's, you know, he's a pretty boy, he's like, I can't believe you did that. And so he cuts her up even more, and she kicks him back and he hits the wall. And then there's a point where she tries to run, but because she's lost so much blood, she trips and falls, and she's stumbling, and she looks up and like her vision is all hazy, but she's like, she knows, like, if I don't take him out now, I'm dead, especially now that he's angry. She runs over and she does her patented kick where she's kicking him like 1,000 times. And she's hitting him so many times that his head is like being pushed through the wall and then finally like kicked out and like out of her her building, like onto the street below. Awesome finish.
Wow.
And right as that happened, like Guile runs through the door and like he gets her, you know, he gets her to the hospital and whatnot. But like, I didn't think she was going to win. I was like, they can't kill Chun-Li like this. Oh, like, what is this? You can't just do this. And she fought hard and was able to come back. It's a dope, dope fight. Google it. Check it out for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's a classic fight. Classic Street Fighter match, if you will.
Yeah, I love me some Chun-Li. Chun-Li's awesome.
She's great.
I was definitely not a fan of the, like, real people movie.
That didn't happen. There's just put that. We could just take that somewhere and just leave it.
The only reason why I liked, the only thing was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, and see, you know what? I thought you were talking about the other Street Fighter movie, where she's the main protagonist. That one's even worse.
That one's worse. Isn't that like yeah, that one's worse. Okay, we're done. Moving on. Yeah, no, Street Fighter. Oh my god. Yeah, Chun-Li's the bomb. I love using her on Marvel vs. Capcom because, you know, she'd be kicking Toyuken. So I don't think that I actually saw that one, the animated movie, but I'm gonna have to now because it sounds like fun. So my next one is from Inuyasha. You guys might hear me talk about Inuyasha a lot because I love Inuyasha. I mean, really, I really just love Sesshomaru. But anyway, so one of my favorite fights It's not necessarily the best fight, but it is a fight that I really like because I love Sesshomaru. So, one of the times where he's being a nice guy and he's protecting Rin, you know, she got kidnapped by some crazy person from the Shichinin Tai. And so Sesshomaru has to rescue her. And, you know, when it comes to Rin, he just pulls out the stops. He does not care. Like, remember, he tried to kill Inuyasha in movie 3. Mind you, he's tried to kill Inuyasha many times, really without cause. What, over a sword that your daddy didn't give you? Like, that's just Inuyasha. I mean, that's Sesshomaru just being a bitchy older brother who's upset. But when it comes to Rin, like, he's serious. He's like a gangster at that point. He's like, what did you do? Don't come from my family. It's my family. And that he turns into straight up godfather mode. And I'm telling you, man, you can't touch Rin or he's over it. Because in movie 3, when Inuyasha lost his consciousness because of the sword and ended up like going crazy and running after Rin and almost killed her, and you have poor Kagome like screaming after him like, oh, Suwaris, you know, sit down to try to get him to stop from killing her because she knows what's about to happen. And Sesshomaru didn't even flinch. He did not flinch. He saw Inuyasha going after Rin and was like, screw it, I'll kill him now. He's like, I've waited all this time. I have literally given this boy mercy every week. We fight once a week. I have not killed him. I've had the ability to kill him every time. I just don't come hard because I'm kind of lazy. This moment, the look in Sesshomaru's eyes has never been like that before. He got his nails out all along and he put his hand back. He was about to put his hand right through Inuyasha's chest. He is so lucky that Kagome saved his life. It also broke the necklace. This is not even the scene that I'm talking about. I'm just using this as pretext to show you how much Sesshomaru loves Rin. That is basically his daughter. Like, do not come for her. He loves her more than life itself. And Inuyasha almost lost his life. And then we wouldn't have had a show called Inuyasha anymore because he would have died by his brother's hand, who wanted to kill him the whole time anyway. So somebody's wishes would have been fulfilled. But moving along, this is when one of the Shichinin Tai kidnapped Rin. And so Sesshomaru has to fight Jakotsu. Remember, Shichinin Tai is all, it's a bunch of people who are actually dead. They were all given part of the Shikon Jewel to come back to life. And Jakotsu is the one who you might think is a woman when you first see him, but is really a man dressed in a woman's clothing. Anyway, and he kind of has feelings for Sesshomaru. He's like, oh, you're hot. And Sesshomaru's like, like, no, my silence meant like that's literally his face. He's like,
yes.
Yeah, totally don't get down like that. So he's like, I just want my little girl. Mind you, I love replaying these things in my voice. So he's like, so I just came to get my little girl. You know, I heard you guys had her, you know, no harm, no foul. Just give her back and everything's good. And then they're like, no, that's not how we roll here. We're actually going to like try to kill her to make you fight me because I just want to test out my sword on you. And he's like, yeah, I'm not about that life. And then Jakotsu's like, well, I am. So you're going to fight me. So let's do it. So Jakotsu has that crazy sword, which is like really, really weird. Kind of reminds me of the dude from Bleach whose sword got really long. But no, this one, it's like a bunch of sword links and they're all like linked together, kind of like a slinky. I don't know how to explain
it.
The point is, he can throw the sword, it gets longer. He can, you know, bring it back like with a flick of his wrist. Look at the flick of the wrist, like, and the sword just comes back. But like he, you know, he's going in. He's like, no, Sesshomaru, you're going to fight me. Now, Sesshomaru is a really good swordsman. He can fight and, you know, whatever it is, he's cool with that. But he's really got to worry about Rin's life because he realizes that this guy's sword has a reach that he's not used to fighting. It's one thing to fight somebody head on or fight a demon or a monster that has certain type of powers. This guy is just a human with a sword that does really crazy things. And so he has no kind of knowledge of where the sword is going to hit. So he can't fight with his normal strength because he doesn't know if the sword is going to hit Rin or not. He's not willing to sacrifice her life because he can't bring her back to life anymore. He already did that once. So he's like fighting this dude, trying to get, he's coming up with all kinds of plans, because you have to know Sesshomaru might be lazy because he doesn't want to put in a lot of effort to do anything. However, he's always thinking, his brain's always working. So every time he crosses swords with this guy, he's like, now I got this. Like, he gets one step closer to figuring out a way to get Rin back. And then finally, I guess he gets the upper hand. He's like, Rin, run. He takes his own sword, like, throws it at the dude, like, gets the dude through the chest. And the dude's like, oh, not that easy. Sesshomaru disarmed his own self. He got rid of, you know, he's already missing one arm. He's missing his left arm. So he only has his right arm, which had also gotten cut up already. But then he throws his sword. So now he doesn't even have anything to defend himself. And he allows this guy to basically slice up his own body so that Rin can get away. And it was like, it was such a nice moment. Like, it was a good fight anyway. It was actually good and it was entertaining, but it was such a nice moment to watch Sesshomaru risk his own body for someone else. He's only done that for Inuyasha maybe a couple of times, but in the series up until that point, I don't believe he had done it yet. So here you have him showing the utmost kindness to this girl, this human child, who, mind you, he never really had any care for humans before, remember? A human is what took his, basically what took his father away from him. You know how much he loves his dad. So,
right.
So I love that scene. I love the love that he showed for Rin to protect her. And then his like plan didn't really work anyway. And then I can't remember. I think she got kidnapped anyway. Again, he wins in the end. He always gets her back. So, but I used to rewind that and play it over again. I'm like, oh, look at all the blood. Like, he's getting cut up. Like, oh, my baby, Sesshomaru. Anyway, that's how I feel about that.
Good episode. Yeah, that Inuyasha was crazy, like, all together.
So long.
That show was interesting. my next fight actually comes from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Yeah.
And it's basically King Bradley versus an army, Captain Buccaneer, the Humunculus Greed, and like a bunch of other people. Like, yeah, King Bradley is on some other shit. Like, I don't, this is one of the points in the anime where like you see like the boss comes. And he's really nothing to be played with. And he's not even the boss. He's you know, a couple steps down. But he goes from, so like, he starts with an ill line. I'm not going to go over the whole story, but the good guys basically take over his castle. And they're all like, they barricaded it. They have a tank, multiple soldiers with guns. And he just walks up with a sword. And they're like, he's really going to, like, he's going to go straight for the front door. And he's like, do you expect me to go through the back door in my own castle? And then charges by himself at these people. He's dodging bullets. He's splitting them in half with his sword. He's cutting up people. He gets to the tank. And the dudes are so shook that they start backing up. They back up into the into the building or castle, whatever. And they're going up the stairs, firing off shells at him. And he's splitting them in half and, like, moving around. He's so fast that they can't hit him.
Yeah.
And the dude's inside the tank. They're in a tank.
They're in a tank.
Bradley has a sword. They're, like, backing up or whatever. They back up all the way up to, like, this main platform. And he ends up killing them or whatever. And so it's just Captain Buccaneer, who's, like, he has, like, a metallic arm. And he's actually a really strong soldier. He's like, well, I guess I have to face him now. And so they get ready to fight. And like within one move, Bradley takes his whole arm off. And that was the end of that. And so the Humunculus Greed comes. Now, Greed has been kind of reborn in another character. So King Bradley, he's a Humunculus as well. And him and Greed had some beef. They end up killing Greed. Mm-hmm. And another guy who had beef with King Bradley, who they fought, he's from another country. He lost the fight with King Bradley too. And so they actually merge these two characters. And like some of Greed's, I guess, essence gets inside of him. And so it's both of them at the same time. So like he has his fighting ability from his body and then Greed's strength and durability from being homunculus. So pretty powerful dude. Go up against King Bradley, and they can barely stand up against him. His swords are just flying by back and forth. And Greed has the ability to, like, harden his body almost to the point of, like, you know, where he can cut people with his hands, or, like, he can block, you know, bullets and stuff like that with his arms. And he's getting, you know, beaten around with this sword like it's nothing. And he's, like, moving super fast. And, like, at one point, King Bradley realizes that because he wears an eye patch. He realizes that he's staying to his, like, left side. He's the eye patch. He's like, oh, you think that's going to help you? And he removes the eye patch. And what it is, it was more like a hindrance to himself. Yeah. He only did that because he was hiding the fact that he was a homunculus. But everyone knows now, for the most part. And so he removes it, and he's like, yeah, I'm not blind. Like, I can see. Yeah. And then it gets, yeah, it goes left from there. They eventually take him out, or at least fight to a standstill with the help of, like, multiple people, multiple, like, you know, powered up people, whatever. But it's one of the, it's not the best fight in Full Metal, but it's one of the best fights just because of how dominant, Bradley was. Like, just a tank.
Yeah, it's a damn tank. Like, and this is Brotherhood. I didn't watch Brotherhood. I only watched the first one.
Yeah, so, like, Brotherhood does, it's similar, but they chop out most of the, there's no filler. They chop out all the filler. They stay closer to the manga as possible. Mm-hmm. And I want to say the animation itself is a little bit better. But all the rigmaroles is out of it, and it actually begins and ends really well. Okay. It's on Netflix. Yeah. Check that out. But it's the better version of the two. And it's the better version.
Oh my god, okay, because I always heard that they're like, oh no, not Brotherhood, like, no. And, like, the first one was the better one. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever.
There's some things. I mean, I think the first one was cool because, I mean, it's more of the anime. So, like, it has the, you know, there's way more episodes than it needs to be. There's extra characters that don't need to be there. Yeah. There's a lot, there's more fun to be had. But in Brotherhood, they get down to it. Like, there's moments where it's really sad.
I heard it was sad. I heard people were like, oh, it's sad. But I was like, is it sad in a good way? Like, it's sad. Like, this is a good, because you know me, I like a sad story. Like, I'm all for the, I'm like, ooh, you got murdered. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like good writing.
Yeah, it's very good. And because the sad stuff is one of those things where, like, and I'm not going to say what happens because I don't want to spoil it, but it's one of those things where you see something happening, and as the audience, you put together stuff before the main characters do. Yeah. And so you see what's about to happen. You're like, oh, and then it happens. You're like, no. And it's like, it's a gut punch, but it's good though. I mean, it's done in a good way. It's not sad in the sense, like, it's not, you know, Attack on Titan sad. There is hope, but there is hope, but it's sad in a way that, like, I didn't expect this person to die, or I didn't expect this person to this be the truth of what they were looking for. Yeah. You know, what they found wasn't what they actually were looking for or what they were hoping for. The reality in certain instances and what has to be done in order to survive, those things where it's sad is like, this was written like, you would clap afterwards. Like, it was such a good, I want to own it. That's how good it is. Like, it's, and I can stream it for free, kind of for free, but I can stream it right now, and I would still like to own it. That's how good it is.
You can download it, right?
I mean, you can download it for a certain time, and then you have to check back into Netflix.
I got it.
But yeah, like, I want to, like purchase and own. Similar to how I want to own Studio Ghibli films, but they never go on sale past a certain point. And we're not going to talk about that, but please go on sale. Anyways.
It's like the vault. It's like the Disney vault.
It's they're very good films, and I totally understand why. But because there was this is a side note, but there was a deal to get, I want to say, like, 10 of the films or something like that. Bundle. It was like 200. So I was like, no, man. No. I mean, I would, but no. That's a whole console. Nah.
Shut up. You're like, I could do more important things.
Yeah.
No, just buy them.
I get one a, I get two or three a year. That's it. If I can, like this, I'm not. Anywho.
Anywho, okay, so I mean, obviously, we're gonna run out of time soon, so I'm just gonna list off my the next ones that I have written down, and I'll just run down them briefly. So I think this is obvious for people: Kenshin versus Saito, the first time they fought in the series, when the basically right when Kenshin starts to ramp up. Everyone knows if you've watched Kenshin, that's like, you know, nothing really happens except obviously that one guy with the messed up thumb holy thing. Like, nothing really happens until Saito shows up. That's where the action starts building. That's where you continue to build on the story. That's the good stuff, because it goes off into the, you know, what's his face arc. The point is, Kenshin versus Saito is still a monumental, very important fight. Like, this was back then, and the animation on that fight was so good, and you got to see Kenshin turn evil. Like, the fact that he couldn't hear Kaoru anymore, it's such an important scene, because Kaoru is just like, he can't hear me. He, like, I'm, no, I don't want him to do this. And then, you know, the guy's like, let them fight. You can't reach him right now. So emotionally, like, watching that was, like, I felt Kaoru. I felt what she was going through in that moment. And I just love the words that they use, because Kenshin, every time he talks, he's just like so kind of like happy-go-lucky, this, that, and the other, something, something, degozaru, something, something, oro, you know, whatever. But in this one, it was more like his eyes got evil, and when he, when, what's his face, when Saito said to him, I forgot, you know, it's funny, I forgot what Saito says, but what Kenshin responds to him is ore no hon, like, that's my book, that's my line, ore no seifu, or whatever, like, that's my line. Like, because he said something like, I'm going to kill you, something like that. And so when you get to see Kenshin turn into this person and you realize, wow, that's the murderer that lived inside of him all those years. And he's still, like, you can't take, you can take, I'm sorry, you can't take the murderer out of the man. You can, I'm sorry, you can take, you know, the girl out of the hood. You can't take the hood out of the girl. So you can, anyway. Can't, you can take the man out of the war, but you can't take the war out of the man, or whatever. The point is, he was still a killer, and he was good at it, and it was a great scene, and I loved it. Moving on, we haven't mentioned any girls in this yet, and there are so many amazing fights with girls in them. I just didn't list them, but I did list Serena versus Queen Beryl from Sailor Moon, everyone, because, first of all, Sailor Moon is definitely one of those entry animes that people watch, at least if you're my age. And season one ender was Sailor Moon versus Queen Beryl. You know, all her little friends had died, which, again, this was great. The fact that all the Sailor Scouts died, that episode, she's literally dead. They're all dead. They're not knocked out. They're dead. They are D-E-A-D. They're not coming back. And I was like, this is amazing. They got killed. I'm just saying, it's how I feel. Like, sometimes you're like, people have to die. And if you're as annoying as the Sailor Scouts, I mean, honestly, Serena should have been the dead one. But whatever. The point is, everybody died. She's at the end. She's fighting Queen Beryl. She's like, I don't think I can do this, because you know that's who Serena is. And then she's like, give me the strength to carry on. And then next thing you know, all her friend's spirits come back, and they like help her hold the moon crystal wand thingy. And then she like defeats Queen Beryl, and Queen Beryl's like, ah! And then everything is like normal, I guess. And then she brings all her friends back to life, because, you know, that's how these shows work. And so, unfortunately, you can't have any of these annoying people dead. And next thing you know, life is back to normal. Just nobody knows each other anymore. They all lost their memories. And, but yeah, it was a great fight. So thank you, Serena and Queen Beryl. Thank you, Sailor Moon, for doing what needed to happen. Yeah, moving along. I also have one from something that not many people listening may know, but the show is called Scryed. In Japanese, they always called it Skraido. Like, that's the way it sounded, Skraido. But, if you're familiar with it, Kazuma and Ryuho obviously hate each other from the jump, and their fight scenes, when they had them, were actually really good. And the final scene between Kazuma and Ryuho, which is where the series ends, and you're like, oh, did they die? Because they were so strong. Basically, Kazuma and Ryuho were like Goku and Vegeta. Yeah. That's pretty much what it was. There's so many of those relationships. That type of relationship is such a, what do you call it? It's just a common theme in anime. So you have the Inuyasha versus Sesshomaru. You have the, well, obviously I already mentioned Goku versus Vegeta, but you have the, just the, that polar those opposites, but then both of them end up being good characters. They're actually, like, you know, your antagonist ends up actually being really a catalyst instead of just being an antagonist. So I liked their relationship and, you know, kind of the way the show went. I thought they were going to do a season two. Never heard of it, so whatever. And then last one on my list, since it was a short list, was Wu Fei versus Trey's Marquis. So, no, wait, sorry. Zex's last name was Marquis. What was Trey's last name?
I have no idea.
Forgot. Trey's.
I just called him by his first. I didn't.
Yeah, just Trey's. Why couldn't his name just be Trey? Maybe it was too black. Anyway, Wu Fei versus Trey's. If you're familiar with Gundam Wing, which was apparently the worst of all the Gundams. I always hear that. I used to always hear that. They're like, Gundam Wing is the worst of the Gundam shows. And I was like, well, it was one of the most popular ones since it came on after Dragon Ball Z. So whatever.
Right.
Point is, there were so many things that went on in that show. So many, just so many things. So many themes. We all hate Relina. I know you feel that way. Yo, she's one of the worst characters to go down in history. Like, for real. Like, I'm all for women leadership and women power, but Relina, somebody please knock that girl off the Peacecraft throne. I wouldn't get with her brother as the leader, even though he's a murderous asshole. As long as he has Noin by his side, he's good to go. The point is, moving on to Wu Fei versus Trey's. Now, everybody knows that Trey's had a relationship with Lady Un. Lady Un was crazy, and she needed Trey's to be there to like keep her sane, because she's a woman and she always needed to like fight and show her place. And Trey's kind of was always there to like reel her right back in. Like, Trey's a military leader. He is good at what he does. He never really flipped out and went cray cray, like super cray cray. But Lady Un did, and she was vicious. I mean, that woman led an army, and she gave no mercy. And every time she was going like super crazy, Trey's would always be like, hey, that's not ladylike. Now, mind you, that's sexist. But at the same time, she was crazy. Okay. He had to reel her back in any way he could. And him saying, hey, you're not being ladylike, really worked for her. So unfortunately, with his death, then she's over in a corner crying on the floor. She's like crazy. She can't be helped. Moving on. Wu Fei and Trey's. Wu Fei didn't want to kill Trey's. Wu Fei wanted to kill the oppressor. You know, he was doing his job as one of the five Gundams, right? And Trey's was obviously the opposition, leading the, I forgot what they were called. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The Earth Sphere Alliance, was it? What? Who cares? Point is, Trey's was leading the military that obviously the Gundams were fighting against, Gundam and all their peeps. And it was just down to a fight of morals. That's what it was between the two of them at that point. It was like Wu Fei believed that Trey's had a certain moral compass that he completely disagreed with. And he was like, this is my chance. Everybody else had fought their other people, and Wu Fei had the time to. I think Trey's had mentioned how I think he thought that Wu Fei was a great fighter. And I think Wu Fei had said the same thing, like, well, you know, that guy can fight. And they fought each other. And Wu Fei had an amazing Gundam. We all know this. That Gundam, the way that those arms came out, Shenlong, that was a great, the dragon, that's what his Gundam was. And that fight, when Wu Fei, like, turned around, like, I liked that part of Gundam Wing. I liked the way that it was animated, like, you would see their face, and then you would see, like, if they were physically fighting a real fight, they would move in that way, and then the Gundam would do the same thing. So I always liked that style of animation, like this realistic idea of what a person would physically do, and then zooming out and seeing what the machine is doing. And so, you know, when he like stuck him through the Gundam, which is basically like, you know, killing him through the chest, I was like, no, Trey, even with your crazy eyebrows, I still liked you. And then, you know, Trey's died, but right before he died, he had said all these things about how he really cared about his military. And all of these things that made Wu Fei realize that Trey's really wasn't the enemy. And then Wu Fei felt really bad about killing him. So that was really the hard part, digesting that episode. I had to rewind it just to when Trey's is alive so I can feel better about my life. And that's the end of my list.
Okay. Well, that works. For mine, I had the fight with Kuro versus Silva and Zeno from Hunter x Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
It actually ended in a standstill. Silva and Zeno are actually they're family members, and they're part of a family of assassins, and they are extremely powerful. And this one person was able to kind of stand up against them without dying instantly was pretty dope. So that definitely check out that fight. Hunter x Hunter, for the most part, is kind of great, except for the main protagonist, Gong, his dad is an ass. And yeah, that's just bad father of the year. You thought Goku was bad? Bro.
Oh, yeah. Well, Goku's absent.
Yeah, and you know what? To set the record straight, he shouldn't get too much of a bad rap when it comes to Gohan and Piccolo raising him, because he died. People forget that fact, that he actually died and had to go through this whole thing to get back to Earth. Yeah. It's after that where
by the way, honey, I'm back from the dead. Yay. Oh, by the way, I got to go get in the spaceship and go over here. Like, dude, yeah. Seriously?
After she had another kid, right? So so he's bad after the fact. But yeah, the Hunter x Hunter is pretty cool. It ends kind of poorly. It ends well, but not well. Because it continues to go, the manga continues. But there is a rumor that it's supposed to be coming back to anime, similar to Bleach. Bleach is supposed to be coming back too, so yay for that. And then Attack on Titan, Levi versus Kenny,
yes.
Just a spectacular fight. The animation ramps up really, really well, and it's one of those things where, like, similar to King Bradley, where this dude is laying waste to everybody left and right, and Yeah,
which fight though? Which Kenny versus Levi fight?
The first one, where he's killing his friends on top of the roof, like they're basically staked out, getting ready to pounce on some bad guys, and he's like, and just lets loose, and he kills multiple people. And that's the thing about Attack on Titan, like, you don't expect certain people to die the way that they do. And it hits really hard. And this is all before the credits, mind you.
I know!
and then they go into their fight. Awesome, awesome. They fight more than once. All of them are great. But the first time, I wasn't ready. I was not ready.
No one was ready. I mean, unless you had read the manga, no one was ready. Mind you, I read the manga. But I still wasn't ready. I still was not ready. I'm telling you, I wasn't ready.
Yeah, it's... Woo-hoo. So, and moving on, we also had a section called Boss Fights for video games that we're going to kind of go through a little bit quickly, because we are running a little bit out of time. We're trying to keep things a little shorter than the 2-hour span, unless something big happens. But aside from that, we kind of want to keep it short, keep it moving. So, toughest boss fights, these aren't the toughest necessarily in gaming. These were the tough ones for me. The first one was Mike Tyson, Punch Out Mike Tyson. Very difficult fight. In order to hit him, he has a tell where he blinks, and right when he blinks, I believe, is when you're supposed to hit him. If I'm getting that wrong, I never beat him, so my bad. But each of the boxers have a tell, right? And so that's when you're supposed to attack, then we're supposed to dodge. And Mike Tyson, like, you know, blocking is not an option. You need to be able to dodge all of his attacks. And I think the number of times he blinks is the number of times he's going to punch. And he can knock you out with one punch. Like, this is just crazy, right? The next one is Ninja Gaiden Black Alma. Alma is a beast. She's actually easy nowadays, but back in the day when she first came out, she was difficult because she was very fast. She has multiple attacks. She throws pillars at you, for crying out loud. Ow. Giant size, flying around the screen. And as a ninja, you know, you're supposed to try to get in and you know, hit her with your sword or whatever. But she moves really fast. She also has an ability to grab you out of your attack and slam you into the ground. It was very frustrating fighting her. And then also, she has an ultimate form that you fight where she summons minions and does all this extra stuff. So she's always a difficult fight.
Yeah, sounds like a beat.
Yeah, she is a B. Mega Man and Bass, Dr. Wily, using certain weapons against him made it a little bit easier, but the fact that he could spawn in different places made it tough, especially if you picked, Bass over Mega Man, because their abilities are slightly different. And he was just, you know, he's one of the bosses that has multiple phases, and his last phase is one that always got me, because it took a. It was one of those things where, like, you would die, like if you died and you didn't know his pattern, you had to go through all this crap to get back to him, and or just to get back to that phase. And each time you die, you lose, like if you were using special weapons, you lose that ammo for the next fight. So it made it even more difficult, and you can only hit him in certain places. So yeah, it's he was actually tough to beat towards the end of the game. Next up is Blue Dragon, and these secret fights, because Square Enix loves to do secret fights, and the guys who made Blue Dragon came from Square. They left and kind of made their own company, so they have secret fights as well. The Gold Mecha Robo and King Poo. Which is, he's not an actual poo. He's actually a snake that's coiled up to look like poo. Super strong characters, even with like maxed out, heroes and items that's supposed to prevent instant death. They are ridiculously tough. King Robo has multiple abilities that can kill your entire squad in one blast. So, fun times. And
God.
the last one was Super Mario RPG Kulix. He is a secret boss. Super Mario RPG was developed by Square, so but it's all Mario themed, obviously. But this particular boss is based on Final Fantasy. He's not actually in the other Final Fantasy games, but he's drawn in a way and he's pulled from that lore. So yeah, super tough boss. Is you're not just fighting him. He actually summons these crystals, and each crystal represents a different element. Fire, ice, that sort of thing. They all can attack individually. They all have different life bars. Combined, their life bar, if you were to take them all out as opposed to just him, is bigger than everybody else in the game. Tough fight if you don't know what you're doing. Like you're going to die. Just putting it out there. I would rather fight the final boss than fight this guy.
Wow.
So yeah, he's a tough cookie.
Sometimes you just gotta hand over the controller.
And the reward is okay-ish, but if you could beat the final boss, I'm like, I don't really need it. But it's
Yeah.
kind of more so bragging rights if you do beat him. Similar to, I mean, you do get stuff for beating King Poo and the Gold Mecha Robo, but it's not because they're secret. It's obviously not necessary. It's cool, but whatever.
The only fight that I have on my list for most difficult is boss fights, because I just need to preface this, anybody listening, that I don't typically get to the boss. I don't beat games typically. I mean, like, I beat Tomb Raider, the reboot, but I don't
Right.
actually think the boss was hard, so I'm not putting that down. I think it was more hard getting there, just like getting used to the game and all this other stupid stuff that happened in that game. But yeah, I didn't feel like the end boss was actually hard. Maybe, anyway, moving on. Shantytown was hard, okay? Shantytown. That's what was hard. So
Yeah.
my most difficult boss fight was Marvel vs. Capcom 2. And you know how like it's like more than one boss, I guess you fight it and then it turns into something else. So I just have a quick story about when I beat it. I do believe this was the first time I ever beat it. Now, I've mentioned before on Marvel vs. Capcom 2, it's like one of my favorite games ever. And I love Rogue, because Rogue is like my favorite X-Men, Rogue and Storm and Gambit. Anyway, moving on. So Rogue, I used Cable and Rogue, and I don't know who else. It was who, I don't know. It was probably Gambit. It was somebody else, but they died. They were no use to me. They died. Who cares about them? They suck. Cable. You need Cable to beat the final boss. You cannot beat the final boss without Cable. Anybody else who has, I dare you to at me. Write something in the comments, because I never did, but I'm also not really good at video games. So anywho, I used Cable. I shot his gun. You know how Cable turns around and it's like a back shot and he's like shooting and
Yeah.
you see his back and all his muscles. Okay, Cable, trying to pick people up in a video game. Rude. And so he's sitting there shooting, and the next thing I know, Cable's dead. And I'm like, how is this happening? Because Rogue comes back, and Rogue only has like 0% life. Like, for real, she's on 0.001 micron, like coronavirus size life left. And then next thing you know, she just like punches. I don't know how to play the game. Like, I don't even know what the, I don't know how to punch. I don't know how to flip. I just press buttons. And next thing I know, I guess I hit up and A at the same time, and she did an uppercut, and the boss died. And you know, at the end of Marvel vs. Capcom, they freeze the frame they like if you beat the person, like they freeze the frame in that position. You don't like follow through. It's just like a freeze. And so there's like Rogue in her outline doing an uppercut. I was like, that's the most awesome way to win. That is burned into my memory. That happened when I was like 19 years old. I'm 100 now. That was a long time ago. And I just want to say like that's the hardest. But I remember being sweaty. I was by myself. Nobody was home. And I don't typically like playing video games by myself because, you know, sometimes they scare me and stuff. But point is, I beat the boss finally after a million tries, and I beat it with my favorite character who's no longer part of the game. And that's all I have to say about that.
You know, that fight was crazy because he doesn't, his name is Abyss, and he starts out as like a dude in armor. And then when you beat that part, he gets, he turns into green, you know, like slimy version.
Yeah.
And then after that, he turns into a red version where he's like giant. He reminds me of Venom a little bit, or Carnage. And like, and so like, it's a three-prong fight, you know, because you have three characters. So, you know, to kind of make it fair, they do that. And it was one of those things where like, I beat the second one. And I was like, okay, what's next? And the whole screen turns red. And I'm like, oh gosh,
what have I got?
Yeah. I was like, what did I get myself into? That definitely a cool boss fight. Definitely cool. So that is it for this episode. I wanted to say some more stuff. We had some more stuff to talk about, but it's kind of running. We're past an hour now, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. But thanks for sticking with us and listening to the whole show. If you have any comments, please comment about your favorite boss fights or your favorite fights in anime and what you think we should have had or shouldn't have had in the show. Definitely subscribe and hit that notification bell. And feel free to follow us on Twitter. You can follow the website at @U_F_G. You can follow me on Twitter at @KennyUFG and on Instagram now. And you can follow Tess at @MessyTessie_Bakes on Instagram. And
interesting. You probably should not follow me. I don't post anything.
It'll be cool just to follow. But yeah, like definitely, you know, and basically, you know, talk to us about what you thought. For the most part, I've gotten like a thumbs up, for the cast, but no one's really said what they want to hear, if they want to hear more of, specific topics and things of that nature. So that's what I'm kind of looking for. Cause we have a laundry list of things we want to talk about, but we also want to know what you're interested in. So please leave a comment, you know, down below. And, you know, let us know. But beyond that, definitely go check out the website, unitedfrontgaming.com, for all the good stuff in terms of news, editorials, reviews, previews, and all that good stuff. Like I said about Assassin's Creed, the new trailer is up there. Destroy All Humans is up there. And our live of Streets of Rage 4. And our review will be going up there shortly as well. So, yep, definitely check that out.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for sticking with us. We hope to see you next week. Have a wonderful night. Stay virus free. Wash your hands. Don't cough on people. Wear a mask. Wear some gloves. Stay safe. It's the point. Social distance. We love you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.